gonna turn this off.
This is a quick test.
Test, test, test.
Hopefully cables aren't spocking it. Alright, we're starting. Mid-laugh. Okay, continue your story because I feel like we need to get this on air.
About this? So I'm calling it my Matrix moment because I don't know what else to call it. Hi, guys. So I said a few episodes back that I watch movies in two modes. I watch it for pure enjoyment and I take it at face value and I don't dissect or analyze anything. Mm-hmm. And then I watch it like Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
I hate myself.
What movie was it, Joe?
Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, no!
So here's the thing. I'm going to adjust this real quick because it's like really high up. It didn't happen. So like I was watching it pure joy into my little dark soul. Mm-hmm. It was just tickling all my fuzzy, warm, evil feels. And then,
it hit me.
And I don't know if I, like, for whatever reason, took this wicked personal, but yo, fuck the family that took Edward in.
Wait, what?
Fuck you. Fuck you. Because how is it that the moment that shit starts to go sideways or it inconveniences you, you are just like a shit person. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know nothing. So here's my situation, right? Like this is what the,
She's shaking people.
I get so mad. So the first incident that happened where I like noticed, it was towards the very end when he's like So he gets arrested. Mm-hmm. Right? And they're like, oh, you know, I didn't mean for you to go and rob a bank. Because they're so fucking dumbasses that they don't even try to investigate, like, with anyone else. They just think that he, out of his own mind, concocted this plan. Someone who knows nothing of this world concocted this plan of, like, oh, well, if I need money, I'm going to steal into this person's house. Because how the fuck would I know that they have a locked room with, like, souped up, really expensive? How would he know that?
He wouldn't.
Why would you, as a parent, as the person who brought this person in, oh, that's Jim's house? Let me go ask, what's her name? What's her dumbass name?
Winona Ryder's?
Yeah, in the movie, whatever.
Fuck.
Let's go ask my daughter, hey, any idea why Edward would be at Jim's house? Like, how did he know about this? No, they just like, oh my God, you're just like so highly intelligent or something or whatever that you just went in and you just went to steal shit. How would he know that? How would he know that? How would you not question that? Like, how did he know? How did he know to go there? How did he know that? Thank you. So here's my other one, right? So he gets home and, bro, seriously. So Jim and, God damn it, what the fuck is her name? What's her stupid ass name?
Chrissy, I don't know.
Chrissy.
Da 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 da. Is it a da?
No.
What?
Oh pa my God. Kim.
What?
It's Kim.
Never would have thought.
Kimba. Kim. Yeah, it is Kim because he used to call her that.
Oh yeah.
So she leaves Edward in the house to run off to Jim and basically tell him to fuck off. And Edward sees that and he gets mad. So he takes out his anger on, like, the wallpaper.
Yeah.
Which, dude, you caught that whole bathroom in the full, like, 2 seconds it took the camera to pan in there? That's some talent.
Yeah.
Right? So he's sitting at the kitchen table and you can see that he's feeling deep remorse and guilt and, like, shame. And there's Dad like, well, you're going to have to find a way to pay for the wallpaper and, you know, with this. Why aren't you asking him what's wrong? Why aren't you asking him what drove him to do that?
Wow.
Bro, I...
What kind of rabbit hole did you go down?
And then the thing is, once, do you remember when, here we go again, because we can't just leave it out of any episode. Every episode comes up. So do you remember in the episode
of Supernatural?
When Death put up a wall in Sammy's brain And he was like, you're going to want to scratch at the wall. Don't scratch the wall. That's what happens to me. Like, I notice this one insignificant thing, and then I'm like, and then I can't, I see it, I matrix it, and I see everything. I'm like Sherlock fucking Holmes of watching movies. I see every, like, why aren't you digging into that? Like, to, so then at this point, the family's so embarrassed that they're just like, oh no, it's, if we ignore it, it'll just go away. It's fine. What really did it for me was when Edward saved Kevin and he was trying to get Kevin's attention to try to figure out, like, if he was okay, but he ended up cutting up his face. Mm-hmm. And then mom comes out and she's like, Edward, come home. Just come home. But then she runs in and just leaves him out there to the wolves. And then she comes and runs out and she's like, it's just barely a scratch. Like, maybe we should just leave him alone and just let him go. Why? Did you bring this boy into your fucking stupid ass world to basically traumatize him and then abandon him?
Do you think this was Burton's intention?
Bro, if it was, I love you. But also, fuck you!
Yeah.
Fuck you! All right.
This is interesting because I've never really seen this. And I wonder if because nowadays we're very more aware of mental health.
Right.
That we're looking at it in a different lens.
Maybe. I don't know what it is.
But also, if that was Burton's intent, because you know how the whole thing of, like, suburbia and everybody's the same and you're supposed to...
Yes.
Yes. I wonder if that's his... That was part of it, where he's, like, parents will, like, sometimes...
It's, like, it's almost like...
They worry about their image more than the, their emotional well-being.
Put it this way. Edward Scissorhands and the suburbs that they live in, it's like you being on medication. And bringing Edward in is like the day that you forgot to take your meds.
Yeah.
And it fucks up all your shit.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you forget about that day and you just keep on taking your meds and you're just living in this fucking fantasy world. This means no offense to people who take meds. I am not meaning it in that way.
But that's usually like a level, it's supposed to level you out.
Right. So it's just like, I got mad because he was up there minding his business, but she's over here trying to make a buck with Avon calling. Like, why would you go up there? What could you possibly think was up there that they would buy your fucking Avon? Don't you think that the neighborhood, being as nosy as you fucking are, you would notice someone entering and coming in and out of that fucking gate? Mm-mm. Nah. You were just being nosy, bored. You're probably tripping on something, like, sniff too much fucking acetone. I don't know what the fuck, for what?
Nothing.
To go up there and be like, oh my God, you look so interesting and I love your look and I'm going to fix your face.
Yeah.
So come home with me. We're going to cause an uproar and then I'm going to get super fucking embarrassed. And I'm just going to shoo you away, ignore you, completely neglect you.
Because my image is more important than you.
Right. And she's like, oh, my family, like, maybe it's best for everyone and for him. You literally showed him what it was like to be around people, and he enjoyed it. The moment it went wrong, you completely abandoned this person, caused him trauma, and then forced him to hide out. He wasn't hiding out by force. That was a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're forcing him to hide out.
Yeah.
So mad. So I can never watch this movie the same again, and I'm so sorry if I've...
My mind's kind of blown right now because I've never viewed it in that way.
I'm broken.
I've always seen, like, I've seen the message I know that Burton is trying to portray with, like, suburbia and how society is supposed to, like, image it, like, how you appeal to your neighbors, keeping up with Joneses, all that stuff.
Right.
And, like, what you're expected to do in life.
He's always done that, because in The Corpse Bride, the land of the living is black and gray, and then the land of the dead is so full of color and all that stuff. So, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Even in the Batman movies, he did it.
Yeah.
But if this was, like, a mindfuck, and it's just taking us this long to understand that mindfuck, or maybe it's like you said, like, our eyes are now open.
Is there a way we can send this episode to Tim Burton? Because I honestly want to get his take.
And he comes back with, like, you're completely fucking wrong. You're morons.
I don't care. At least we'll know.
I'll be crushed.
We'll know the intention.
I'll be so crushed.
But you know what, though? You're not wrong.
It just bothered me. Like, see, if I... That, to me, is, like, taking in a stray. Like, if you find a dog on the side of the road and you feel bad for him, so you feed him and you welcome him into your home, but then all of a sudden he's chewing up your shoes and tipping over your trash can and he's chewing on the fucking legs of your couch and you literally kick him out of your fucking door or drop him off at a shelter. Oh. Like, what are you doing?
That hurts me.
What the fuck are you doing? Why not think about the responsibility that you're now taking on as you're bringing in this living creature into your home? I'm getting way too passionate about this. I need to step.
All right. While you simmer,
okay.
But you're not wrong.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
drink your cold brew foam. I will say 10 minutes in, hi, if you're new here. My name's Man, and this ranty lady is Joe. But for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say ranty. Passionate.
I guess.
We are two very wicked awkward assholes who get together every Wednesday and talk about pop culture things like movies, music, TV, and books.
Mm-hmm.
And get very passionate about people treating like others like shit. So.
And then find us on social media at WHAM617. Don't forget about our Spotify playlist.
Yeah.
It's getting up there. It's getting good. I do have one more story, but it's about work.
Tell me.
Okay. So my...
I love stories.
My jefe and I...
What?
My jefe, my boss.
Oh, your jefe.
Yeah, my
I
boss
I thought you said jefa. I was like, you said that wrong. Meaning HIPAA? I was like, what?
Oh, I thought you meant like jefa.
No. No. Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
Continue.
So him and I have developed quite the little banter.
How else are you supposed to make work fun?
I'm telling you. He reminds me a lot of, like, my personal, like, real-life friends. So it's very easy to fall into this banter with him and joke with him. And, like, I forget that he's my boss sometimes.
Oh,
now,
no.
He's young, so it doesn't help. So we're talking about my schedule, right? And I've been a real pain in the ass lately. But you know what? Fuck it. Because I was, like, abused. All right? And so many hours that I picked up and shit, right? So now I'm like, it's okay for me to ask for favors, even though I feel guilty about
it. They worked you until they couldn't work you no more.
Pretty much. Until they really had no choice. But I was like, yo, like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So we're talking about me picking up on a Friday, like a 12-hour shift. And I had said to him, like, oh, like, you know, if you need me to come in early, that's fine. And he's like, all right, cool. And then I was like, it all depends on, like, if my mom can take the kids or not. And he's like, all right, cool. So I was like, oh, my God, like, I already had myself, and I'm reading text messages now. I already had myself down for 7 to 7 on my calendar tomorrow, LMFAO, and 5:30 on Sunday, not 6. So on Sundays, I can only work till 5:30 because the kids have school Monday morning.
Mm.
He answers with Canoodar.
Huh?
Canoodar. Oh, I got you. Already 5:30. And I was like, what's a canoe dar? And he goes, you tell me. So I sent him. It's an emoji of a canoe and like the dur face.
Canoe dar.
So he sends me back LMFAO and an emoji of a calendar. And I was like, what? And he goes, huh? Is canoe dar still over your head? And I was like, oh, 100%. Uppercase LOL. He sends me like a vanishing text message, right? And it's, I didn't have like, I couldn't read it. So actually, I think what I did was I started typing as he started typing. So he sends me like this vanishing text message. I've not read it yet. And I was like, is this like gibberish? Should I say it really fast? Like canoodar, canoodar, canoodar. And he sends me my message back. But this is what happens when he sends it. It's.
What the hell is that?
I wrote, I already had myself down for 7 to 7 on my canoodar tomorrow. Wait. I'm such a fucking idiot.
Wait, how do you do that effect?
Oh, it's a. This is an iPhone thing, all right? Oh.
Well, fuck that. Oh my God.
So I was like, I'm such a fucking idiot. And he's like, LOL tripping. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't breathe. I'm fucking wheezing. And I was like, all right, now that I can breathe, which weekend am I supposed to ask another coworker about? So he goes, weekend, question mark. And I'm like, for October, because of my vacation. He goes, oh, holy canoe.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, hold on, right? So we get through that. This set of messages is the next day. The next day?
Oh, God.
He is, like, relentless sometimes. I can't even. Yeah, I'm talking about you. So the next day, he doesn't listen to us. Honestly, it's because I haven't given him. Because I'm so scared that I'm going to lose my fucking job. So I was like, stop. It's fucking embarrassing. So we finished that conversation. He's like, can you do me a huge favor? The next day. An hour after that, I was like, is the 25th my weekend? That's the one. I was like, all right, take me off the 24th. You got it. So my next weekend, the 16th and the 17th, I had asked about like a switch or whatever. He goes, right. So the 25th of this month, someone will cover it, because I wasn't able to find coverage for it. And I was like, okay, cool. So then he goes, oh, you offered to pick up the overnight on the 24th. You want me to take you off of that? And I was like, and keep the training shift? Sure. So training 8 to 2. And he goes,
oh, God.
I can't stand his ass. I swear to God. Oh, I don't know. I was just figuring being back at 2:30 would be painful. If you want to ditch the training shift and do the overnight on Thursday and have Friday off, or get rid of both, we got the one single message, options. Check your canoe dart and see what fits. He will never let me live it down. I'm done. I'm now known as canoe dart.
Canooter. That sounds like a...
done with you.
Canooter. Canooter. That sounds like canoodle, but...
it sounds like a lot of things. All I know is I'm really great, because then... And it must have been some type of thing happening, because I was talking to my tattoo artist, since I'm going to the tattoo expo tomorrow, and we're like discussing a few things or whatever. And I was like, I'm so excited. You have no idea. And I closed my phone and I put it away. When I picked up my phone again, all I read was, I have an idea, and LOL. And I was like, shh, like, don't tell me. I don't want to know. Leave it as a surprise. Unless you need to run something by me, then cool. Tell me. He goes, no, like, I meant like, I have an idea of how excited you are, because I am also excited. And I was just like, please don't judge me. Please don't judge me.
This sounds like every conversation Jonathan and I have.
Pretty fucking much. See, you're not the only one.
Thank God. Sometimes I feel like a fucking moron.
Whenever that whole fucking canoe dart thing happened, like, if I had just, like, poofed. What I was about to send. Or as soon as he said, because he said it immediately, canoe dar. And I was like, what the fuck is a canoe dar? Yeah. Like, instead of going back to read.
You never read what you write.
No. I'm like, why would I think that autocorrect would change calendar to fucking canoe dar? Two words. Like, what? Anyways, check your canoe dars for next week's episode.
Oh, my God.
So now that story time's over. Do you want to start with... We didn't even figure out what we were going to start with.
No, we didn't.
Do you want to talk about books?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because this is also another rant, so I feel like this could be our, like, rant episode.
Oh, this is our ranty episode. Great.
So, one of Joma's book hauls was Feet Club.
Yes. Not Feet. No.
I was trying to say it weird.
That's Foot Club. Nope, she went with Feet. Feet Club.
Feet Club.
When you pose, it's like...
And you sell pics.
Yeah. I saw a TikTok of this girl who sold her armpit hair for $100.
Wait, is that a thing?
Yes. So Jen sent it to me and she's like, check her page. She sold armpit hair. She stuffed masks into her shoes and put her feet in it and walked around in her shoes all day with masks in them. Sold that. She scraped her tongue, sold a baggie of her scraped tongue scrapings. What? Yeah, tongue scrapings for another $85. This is a thing that she does.
Somebody's actually purchasing this shit?
Yeah, it's probably creepy dudes, you know? Who want, like, the crusties between your toes if you have those. Like, masks in the shoes. With the foot in the shoe and the mask.
What? Where's her website?
It's her tickety talk. Do you want me to find it?
Oh, she does it through TikTok?
No, I mean, she just brags about it through TikTok.
That's I've seen that. No, I didn't know. I'm like, is she on OnlyFans? I don't know.
Probably. Yo. But she was like, I love how she was like, goddess armpit hair sold for $100. I was like, no.
Yeah.
And there she was.
You could do it. We could do it.
Shave it away. I mean, I probably could. At this
Let
point.
It grow enough?
Oh, yeah.
Boob hair?
Nipple hair?
Yeah.
Apparently, guys didn't know that that's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing.
That girls have nipple hair.
I mean, it's not, like, a lot.
It's, like, this little ring of...
Yeah, but it's just, like, well... Like,
a few.
Yeah, it's never... It's not, like, a big tuft of hair.
No, not like dudes. But, like, gentlemen, we grow hair where you grow hair. Like, that's just how anatomy works in physiology and biology. Like, did you never take a class?
Guess not. How did we get here?
Feet club. I'm so sorry.
I was gonna say it's the fetishist club.
I know it's bad.
So I am gonna rant about this.
Yes.
Chuck Palahniuk, if that's how you say the man's stuck, he's fast becoming one of my all-time faves. So I know Fight Club. I know he wrote it. Never read it. And that and Joe, when you got it in your haul, I was like, yo.
Yeah, because I love that movie. It's literally one of my top five. How was it? Have you seen the movie?
Well, I watched it right after this.
Oh, okay,
because
good.
Because, like, before, I knew the story, Brad Pitt, Edward Norton, like, I knew what happened, like, the storyline, basically, but I'd only seen bits and pieces. I'd never
You've
seen
never
it.
Sat through it.
Right.
Okay.
So, I read the book first, and then, fucking loved it. And then I watched the movie. Mostly just to see, like...
How it compared.
Yeah. And... I was actually very surprised to see that it's basically 90% of the book. It's like...
That's also a very small book.
It is. It's only like over 200 pages.
That's literally like a script.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not hard to... Oh, that's so satisfying.
So, yeah, about 90%... I would say a good 90, 95% of the movie is the book. So, for those that haven't read it, it's like the narrator is... He meets this dude, Tyler, and... Long story short... They start a fight club.
Yeah.
But then Tyler also gets it in his head to create Project Mayhem, which is they, like, band together all these fight club members, and they, like, do things.
To go against, like, government shit.
To go against society. And, like, so they'll...
Tyler's thing is to go against the social norm.
Right, so he's like, go start a fight with somebody, but let them win. Yeah. And that was a way to, like, get them into their fold.
That show was so hilarious.
I know,
I
the
love
priest.
That scene, yes.
And then you just see him in other parts. I love it.
I like the guy riding his bike around. I love it.
And, you know, just other things that you could think of, like anything you could think of. Setting fires, whatever. Trashing
literally
things.
Creating mayhem.
Yeah, but then it's the whole, like, the narrator versus Tyler, blah blah blah. So I'm not gonna, like, give it away because I'm sure people know, but I actually was not aware of the Project Mayhem storyline. I always thought it was just about the underground fighting.
So much bigger.
Was like, that was at least an interesting part of it, and I absolutely fucking love Chuck's writing.
Yeah,
like, it's...
Did it translate on screen?
Well, I was just gonna say, I would say about 85 to 90% of the movie, the words spoken, the dialogue is like all from the book, word for word.
I love the way the movie starts at the end, but when you hear the narrator talking and he's like, or even if he's talking about, like, his boss is like, oh, he must have had his grande enema latte or whatever. And I'm just like, dude, this is so witty.
So all of that is Chuck.
Nice.
So basically everything that comes out of Tyler Durden's mouth, the narrator's mouth, it's all Chuck Palahniuk.
This is great. So, I am so excited to hear that.
It does start the same way. You know, they're in the high rise, gun and mouth, all that stuff.
Can't think of anything.
But what I wanted to bring up is, and also, but Helena Bonham Carter?
Yes.
Was beautiful.
If I were to get any tattoo of her, it would be her in those fucking sunglasses hat with the fucking smoke coming out of her mouth.
And I will say
so
that
beautiful.
The way that Marla... is described in the book, like, 100%, they just pulled Helena Bonham Carter right out of it.
God.
So it was, and also it kind of like hit me. I was like, where in the world would you see these three people in a movie together ever again?
Probably not.
Brad Pitt, Helena, and Edward Norton.
I think that was like Brad Pitt's like top physical, like that was his peak.
That was
well, he was also Detroit, but like, He looked fucking good.
No, I think that was like when his popularity was like at its peak.
Yeah.
And it only more so.
Yeah.
Because that movie Mighty Joe or Mighty Mickey Blue Eyes. Jesus
Mighty
Christ.
Mighty Joe Young? That's about a gorilla.
I know. Mickey Blue Eyes, Ocean's 12.
Oh, 11, yeah, it was like a cluster of movies that he did. Yeah.
So, and that's like, so he was a big deal. He was kind of wooden for me, but like his physical visual was pretty like spot on. But I love Ed Norton so much. He's a good actor all around. Helena was good. Meatloaf was good with Bob the Big Tits.
Oh my God. Our homeboy Holt was there.
Yeah. I was like, I wish I got to see him more.
Jared Leto was there.
But it's like, where the hell are you to see all these people in a movie together?
I don't know why I enjoyed that movie so much.
And I think the reason why this works is because David Fincher is the one who did this. So yes. He did.
What
are
you doing?
Mindhunter.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'm like, why? That sounds familiar. Yeah. Yes, yes.
So I feel like there isn't a lot that I'm disappointed with David Fincher.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that...
He's like an artist.
I don't know if it was his decision or whatever to like stick close to the book, but I'm glad he did because if you stray from it, like...
It wouldn't have worked.
It wouldn't. Yeah, exactly.
It wouldn't have worked.
But so it's interesting because in the book, excuse me while I just find this real quick. There's an afterword by Chuck, and I think he wrote it post movie, right?
Oh.
So he's where the fuck? Oh yeah. So he's literally talking about like he was going on a tour, like a haunted tour or something.
Okay.
And it was like something haunted trail, haunted tunnel tour. And what do you call those? The tour guide?
Yeah.
He's like, all right, guys, like we're going into this dark tunnel. But the first rule of the haunted tunnel tour is you don't talk about the haunted tunnel tour. And I'll read this word for word from Chuck. he goes, hey, I wrote that book. And Cowboy says, wrote what? Fight Club. He's like, there was a book?
Oh. Yeah.
I was like.
People don't know that.
No. And I was like, that's why it kind of made me think about it. Because we love movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actors can be good. But they're not acting. Like, somebody had to create that story, had to create the world.
Yeah.
So it kind of, like, bothered me a little bit. I was like, we all know Fight Club. We all love Fight Club because of the movie.
Yeah.
But that's Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
Those are his words. They're saying. It's not Brad Pitt.
So I think the way... So when it's, like, a script, like, it's an original script, it's... I mean, it's kind of like what Chuck did. They write you material for it. But I feel like with a script... Actors have maybe more liberty to bring certain things out of themselves for that. I think with this, like, I don't think it was hard for those actors to channel any of that stuff.
No, and I love that he even, like, so in this afterword, he literally goes on to, like, describe basically how Fight Club, via the success of the movie, kind of like influenced a lot of different things.
Oh my God, it's a whole culture.
Yeah, so before Donatella Versace sewed razor blades into men's clothing and called it the Fight Club look, before Gucci fashion models walked the runway shirtless with black eyes, bruised and bloodied and banished, before like he goes on
examples that are based around
before young men around the world took legal action to change their names to Tyler Durden.
Yeah.
Before the band Limp Bizkit bannered their website with Dr. Tyler Durden recommends a healthy dose of Limp Bizkit.
Are you kidding me?
So he goes on and on and on. And he's like, before all that, there was just a short story.
Mm-hmm.
This whole
and short
thing.
It is.
Well, no. Not the book. It was just a short story.
Oh.
Which is literally one. He said that chapter 7, I think, was the original short story.
Oh, okay.
And then he expanded on it to make the book.
Mm.
Can think about that for 1 second. One man decided to write a short story that that prompted a book, that prompted a movie, that really rose the success of Brad Pitt, Edward Norton, and Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah.
Where would they be if Chuck hadn't decided to write that short story? Where would he be if he, because this was one of his like first major books.
It just influenced a lot.
And there were, like, you know, all the fight clubs around the world popped up.
And
literally,
you can walk into any place, and if there's dudes there, and you say the first rule of, everyone knows what follows after that.
That's what I'm saying.
If you bring up Fight Club, if you bring up Tyler Durden, everyone knows what the fuck you're talking about.
Exactly. And even from me, who had never really read this, didn't read the story, hadn't seen the movie beginning to end, I still knew it.
Yeah.
From
People.
Mm-hmm. From seeing the bits and pieces or the captures of images from the movie.
Did you like the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that there was one difference that I was kind of like, why did they do that? So in the movie, they kind of explain, this is a spoiler alert, but I think everybody knows the twist at the end. They kind of, in the movie, they kind of explain Tyler as a figment of his imagination.
Yes. It's like a, it's almost like borderline personality.
Well, in the book, the narrator and Tyler explain it out loud that it's not imaginary. He is a split personality.
Yeah. Well, that's what I took away from it.
You did?
Yeah.
Because in the movie, I kind of seen it like as an imaginary thing.
The thing is like when he's like, I am Tyler Durden. Because he didn't even know his own name up until Tyler just appeared in the hotel. But then he goes back to memories of where he was imagining Tyler. And then he put himself in Tyler's shoes. So I took it as like, this dude is like, he's split personality. There's nothing else to it.
That, okay. Because when I was watching the movie, I was like, did they just explain it away as imaginary?
No.
I would hope not. But they explain, you know, like Chuck explains that the whole point of Tyler was that when the narrator was asleep, Tyler had full control. So that's why, like, he wasn't aware of him being places and doing things. And then there was a couple of things that weren't in the movie that I was like, okay, like, that's fine. In the movie, the narrator met Tyler Durden on a plane.
Yes.
But in the book, he sees him on the beach. And this doesn't fit. So, like, it was just a weird, quirky thing. Like, he saw this dude, Tyler, well, he didn't know him at the time, but pulling logs from the ocean and making a structure out of it on the beach. And he's like, what the fuck is he doing? And he's just sitting there on the sand. And then when the sun hits it just right, the shadow of the logs makes a hand. And, like, that's, like, weird, right?
That's his mental illness.
Yeah.
Fucking with him.
But that's how he, quote unquote, met Tyler in the book.
I like it better on the plane.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. That's why I was like, I'll give you that because that makes more sense than seeing a dude make a hand structure. Maybe
it's probably, that probably would have given away too much in the movie at the very beginning.
And then there was one funny thing that wasn't in the movie. Which I'm actually glad because it didn't really fit her character. With Marla, she's got the cigarette butt, always constantly smoking. She's got zero, like, just dirty visage. So but in the book, her mom gets liposuction. You know how they make the soap with the fat? They did end up, like, obviously going to, like, the clinics and stealing fat in the biohazard dumpsters. But there was one part where her mom would also get lipoed from her, like, her ass and her thighs, and she would always give it to Marla, and she's like, hey guys, can you put this in the freezer for me? But it's my mom, so don't, like, don't do anything with it. Like, and she would use it to for lip injections, like lip fillers.
She was, like, making her own?
Yeah.
Oh, gross.
And so that's why I'm glad that they didn't put it in the movie, because it really didn't fit her character. Like, she wasn't that vain. You know
what
I mean?
Not only that, but that would have pulled her into Tyler and the narrator. Yeah. That would have given away too much again.
So, but the guys ended up using that fat for the soap, and she got mad. She's like, you turned my mother into soap! She got, like, so mad. And I was like, okay, I can see that not being in the movie because it was just, like, one random little side thing. But
yeah.
All in all, fantastic book. I mean, good movie.
Yeah.
But I think that we need to start celebrating the whoever creates the worlds more, I think. That was, like, that was sort of my rant. I was like,
who knows how many movies out there are actually based on books? And you're not going to know until you, like, fucking go into IMDb and look it up and be like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And I'm like, how?
Like, Chaos Walking, you totally forgot.
Yeah.
That was based on books.
And I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, if I were Chuck and you know, I sold away the rights to this movie and it was huge. And then I'm like, think of how it fucks with you. And you're seeing all these like famous actors on stage and they're winning awards for this movie. And you're like, you're sitting at home in your PJs eating ice cream and you're like, they're winning the awards. But this is my story.
Yeah.
Like, those are my words that they just acted out.
So weird, right? I remember when I finished my book, Christian was living with us at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, oh, like, I remember saying something like, I would never sell, like, I want to get my copyrights because once I get my copyrights, then no one can change it, was my thing. And Christian was like, well, what if, like, somebody offered to buy it for, like, millions of dollars, but they changed everything except the names, would you sell it? And I was like, no. And they're like, that doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, but it does, because this is my story. So why? It almost reminds me of, what was the movie that I saw with, Zendaya? That black and white movie that I saw, I told you about it. And she was pissed because her boyfriend was the director. But she's like, you took my story and you made it your own. And then you went and told it. So now you left me with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing. So that's kind of like what I would feel like if I had sold the rights to my book and then someone went and made it their own and created this whole story. And like you said, all of a sudden awards. And I'm just like, I'm left with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So good for Chuck
for
holding on to that shit tight, because now people know.
I was going to say, I feel like it's more successful when filmmakers involve the author.
100%. I think people have learned that too.
Like Leigh Bardugo with Shadow and Bone.
Yes.
Like she made a cameo. She's very much an exec producer.
I think thanks to fans, that's why more authors are more involved with their stuff being made into films or TV. Because I feel like it wasn't like that before.
Mm-mm.
I feel like the very first introduction that I got to that was with the Harry Potter books.
Yeah, because
so J.K. Rowling
was a big part of it. Yeah,
right. But I feel like it was almost like you're kind of just back there if we need you. Whereas now the authors are coming up front and center and like, you're not doing this without my say-so or my go. So I love that because it's for the fans.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about authors is that it's for the fans. You don't fucking sit there and pour your heart and soul into a fucking book that you've been writing for months just so that you can go to the movie theater, spend 15, 20 bucks for 2 hours of entertainment and then leave. So I think that with writing a book, it's more time invested for the author. It's more time invested for us readers. And when we finally see it up on screen, if it's not up to our fucking expectations,
we're going
to
bitch on
it. We're going to shit on everything that you love.
Yep.
And how fucking dare you let these people take your masterpiece and creation and murder it the way that they did. And that's how you lose all your fan base. So good for Chuck.
Yeah. Or even if it was Fincher's idea to, like, stay close, whoever it was, thank you, because so Chuck is amazing.
One of my favorites.
All right, end rant.
End rant.
Yeah, so you tell us something, and then we can end.
I bought a book called Punk 57.
It seems appealing to me.
There's a lot of neon in this book. Sorry, I'm trying not to hit the fucking... Okay. So this is by, and to be honest, I know I own more books by this person, but I can't think of a single one right now. Penelope Douglas.
Where'd you get this?
Online. So it's with Misha and Ryan.
Oh, it's like Misha Collins?
No. Ryan, I think, is the girl. Misha's the dude. So basically, it's these two kids that were pen pals from the fifth grade. And then they made the mistake of meeting up.
Oh god.
So after that shit
ensues. Happened.
Yeah, so that's all that I know of it, and I know nothing else.
You said it was on TikTok?
Yeah, but so it's funny because it was a dude that read it. They were told him, "Oh, but I'll bet you won't read Punk 57." So he like went up and read it, and then it was the look on his face that I was like, I need to buy this.
Yeah.
Why? Well, what's that look on your face?
What was the look?
It was like,
describe it to me.
Completely mortified with dread and sorrow.
Oh shit.
And I was like, I don't like it, but I'ma do it.
Yeah.
Why?
TikTok is dangerous because I see all of the like extreme horror recommendations, and I was like, Don't do it. Oh. Don't do it.
Did you?
No, not yet. But I'm like, I'm this fucking close because they're always showing the same books. And I was like,
yeah, no. See, it says, so he eventually, like, he gives you, like, a little background of, like, oh, we were pen pals since fifth grade. And for the next 7 years, they kept pen palling, right? Mm-hmm. And at one point, he's like, fuck it, I need to meet her. I just don't expect to hate what I find. And then, apparently he did. Can you fucking imagine? He hasn't written in 3 months. Something's wrong. I think what it was is that, like, he went behind her back and he found out who she was and didn't like what he saw because he took it at face value. And now she's left wondering, like, why the fuck you're ghosting me? It's like getting ghosted pen pal style. That fucking sucks.
I wonder why that man was mortified, though. Like, that's gonna make...
I know. I'm planning on reading it. Don't worry. I can't. So that was that real quick.
What do you want to talk about? I'm done for this episode.
You're done for this episode? Okay. I'm just gonna bang out this one. So I saw a documentary.
Oh, called, it's a doc?
Yeah. The Women and the Murderer. Now...
Was this on Netflix?
It was. And this took place in Eastern France between 1991 and 97. So this is like, honestly.
You're getting itchy or something.
Yeah, because you know how like most documentaries that we watch is like a big factor in the end?
Yeah. Yes.
This didn't have that.
Oh.
This was just like, I felt like for the sake of these women, this story needed to be told and that's it. It was an hour and a half documentary, and that's all it was, right? So, the story is about, let me see. Pascal Escarfel, Kathy Roch. These are all French names. Kathy Elsa Agnes, Elizabeth was assaulted. Helene Magali and Estelle, these are all young women between the ages of 19 and 32. They were all very pretty, who were sexually assaulted with their, and then they were found stabbed and with their throats cut.
They all died?
Except for Elizabeth. She was assaulted. Elizabeth was able to help the French police department, like homicide department. She was huge in, providing a sketch and details and all these things, right? Now, mind you, this did go on for 6 years, mm-hmm. right? 91 to 97. My favorite part about this whole thing is that the lead detective in the homicide unit, so she was the first woman in serious crime. Her name was Martine Montiel. So Martine... people were, like, talking, and they were like, oh, it's a serial killer. And her response to that was, this isn't America. We don't have serial killers. Like, I understand because you're the fraction of the size, I think, right, of the U.S.? Is it a fraction of the size? France? It's, like, super tiny. Okay.
Well, it's not super tiny, but yeah.
But also, like, you're a part of a bigger country, so how could you possibly believe...
Well, people, the killers just don't come in your borders.
That's basically what she's like, we're not going to call this a serial killer. The coroner is calling this a serial killer because the coroner sees that the slashes and the stabs and the sexual assault, it all connects. So he was putting it down as SK serial killer, but she refused to acknowledge this person as a serial killer, right? Now watch this, ready? Where is it? Because this is just too fucking good. So the term serial killer was a taboo term over in France at this time. France did not have a DNA database at the time. Their government opposed it because they thought it was a privacy issue or it could be misused. So it wasn't until 1998 that they decided to open up a DNA database. What? Yes. So they kept finding DNA for this killer at every scene, or it was like 3 or 4 scenes, and they couldn't do shit about it because they didn't have a database to go off of.
That's like the early pre-1950s like investigations.
Yeah. So the second that they decided to do a DNA database, and this was in June of 1998, it resolved hundreds of murders. Yep. So there is this journalist who makes an appearance every now and then. Her name is Patricia, and I really didn't know like what her deal was, and you find out at the end. So in March of 98, the serial killer was ID'd. His name was, it's like Guy Georges, and he was ID'd by the coroner. So, like, the little bit of DNA that they had.
Science tells all.
Yeah. So, the little bit of DNA that they had, that's how they were able to match it. And the thing is that Montiel, which is Martine, the detective, she relied so heavily on this doctor for forensic evidence. Like, he's the only one. So, like, at any moment, if he was, like, mad at Martine, he could have just fucked up all her shit. Mm. Thankfully, he wasn't that kind of guy. But whatever.
I was going to say, thankfully, he was truthful to his work.
So, the whole time, Martine is trying to, like, keep the shit under wraps. She doesn't want it to go out to the media because she's afraid she's going to spook him and he's going to flee. In the meantime, Helene's mom, which is one of the victims, was that persistent mom that the second her daughter died, she's like, did you look at this? Did you investigate this? Did you look at these nearby businesses to see if anything was going on? My daughter was here this day. Did you investigate these people? Like, she was that mom that was, like, on these bitches forever.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So on March 26, 1998, at 7 o'clock in the morning, the media released Guy's name after the police desperately tried to keep it under wraps. But by 12:24 that same day, that afternoon, he was arrested at a grocery store. He didn't even know he was a wanted man, right?
What was he doing at the grocery store?
He was just shopping, girl. He had to go get his bread and milk.
I thought you meant that he, like, a crime occurred. And
He was just shopping at the grocery store.
Wow.
Now, here's the thing. The case didn't go to a trial until March of 2001.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
3 years to get to trial?
Yeah. So, his lawyer was a guy named Alex and Alex's ex-wife. Because Alex thought that having a female lawyer on his defense would appeal to the jury.
Mm.
Okay? Now, his wife sympathized with Guy. She said he was very... She felt that he was very honest and that he was very transparent and all these things, right? So, now, Guy's fingerprints were never found, but he did have, like, they found, like, some DNA, and this odd thing happened. At one of the crime scenes, they found a bloody footprint, and they realized that the second toe was longer than all the other toes, and apparently that's, like, something called Egyptian foot. So everybody that they brought in as a suspect, they had them take off their shoes to look for this Egyptian.
How did they know by the footprint?
I don't know. I guess when they pressed or something. I don't know. But it's like, my thought was like, well, he could have, like, it could have smudged.
Mm.
Right? So they made this guy take off his shoes. No Egyptian toe. The toe was not there. So whatever. Now, this lady, Solange Dumic, was the defense lawyer for the victims. Like, she was a... Right.
So the prosecuting team.
So they were, So the defense team was like convinced it's not him because you didn't find any fingerprints. He doesn't have the Egyptian foot thing. The sketch doesn't match, which it didn't. And from whatever other, their gut feeling, whatever. So he pleaded not guilty. But at the same time, there was this dude, right? His name is Francis. I can't say his last name. Bichette? Something.
Where are you looking?
Right here. I don't know.
Francis Bitch.
It's French, yeah. So he went under the alias Sydney. I gotta lower this so I can read. And at the precinct, so this is all coming from the journalist now. The journalist that came up in the beginning, and I'm just like, I don't understand how you... She's like the first female journalist, and she's like, nobody took me serious because of the way that I dress and the way that I carried myself, and I pretended to be kind of ditzy, but people caught on very quickly that I wasn't as dumb as I looked. So I'm still trying to figure out, like, what is the purpose of this journalist being here? So the journalist says that Sydney, instead of interrogating Guy in a normal interrogation setting, what he did was said, come into my very warm, comforting, and welcoming office. put on some jazz. Would you like some whiskey? Let's just talk. We're just here to talk. And in that moment, Guy confessed to everything, right? So he confessed to everything. So Sydney didn't tell Guy that he was a wanted man. He basically, like, they made up some bullshit as to why he got arrested. And they didn't tell him that he was the one that was being looked at for the murder of so many women. It's just like through casual conversation, Guy started spilling his guts, right? So, Guy claimed that he was abused during custody while he was up on trial or whatever. Yeah. People were saying that he was very cool and evasive throughout the trial, and he only answered specific questions that were like yes or no answers. If it required like an explanation, he wouldn't answer it. Mm. He kept his composure the whole time, and people were buying that, you know what? This guy didn't do it. He's going to get away with it. And the prosecution for a second thought, like, I'm fucked. Like, if I don't find a weak spot to hit him, like, he's going to get the fuck away with this. Mm. So the prosecution, and I love that it was a woman. I love so much that this was a nerdy woman with a funny haircut in her early 30s.
Oh, I love this.
Yes.
I can relate, girl.
She's like, you know, I'd been observing him. I was very meticulous. I handed him crime scene photos. And the crime scene photos were so gruesome that anyone in the police department or any professional would look at it for 2-3 seconds and then just move on. Mm. Like, they had a hard time looking at him. He would sit there.
And stare?
10, 15 minutes examining the crime scene photos and not flinch. Once. Right? So she took note. She said that he was completely detached.
Wow.
She noticed his hand gestures. So the coroner had said that whoever had done this was left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the only time, I'm going to just put this in real quick and then I'll let you know where I'm getting at. So this is just a little background for him because I want to give you some background before I tell you what happens at the end because I guess it was kind of shocking. But anyways. So Guy George was born out of wedlock to a young woman and a soldier who was just passing through, a.k.a. mom might have been a hooker.
Yeah.
That's the way I took it. She was a prostitute. She abandoned him. He ended up in the system, and he got bounced around from home to home, and eventually he was placed with a family who had 20 children of their, like, they had 7 of their own, and then the rest, like, 13 kids were from foster care.
Jesus Christ.
Yes. But the people were saying that were doing like the interviews that were saying that this was like the Morin family, that the Morin family was as loving and encouraging and supportive as they could be to a family of that many kids. So
that's a damn school.
Yeah. So at 16, he attacked a girl. He tried to strangle her. He got put in his place. But then again, later on, he assaulted 2 of his foster sisters at 14 and 15. And that's when he was sent to the children's home or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So his foster mom came to court to, like, speak, whether it was on his behalf, but she was up on the stand or whatever. And he was able to, like, see her. And he was like, you know, like, I miss you and I love you. And it was the first, like, real emotion that he's shown. And his foster mom's response was, I love you, but my heart is dead for you. So it was just like the final rejection. Like, this is it. There's no one in your corner. So
that's tough to hear.
This trial lasted 14 days, by the way.
I feel like that's not a lot.
I don't know. I feel like that's a lot. Anyways. So we have Dumique, right? And she's like looking, paying attention, absorbing everything about him, trying to take in everything to find a weak spot. So she's like, you know, I noticed that when I hand you photos, you reach with your left. Are you left-handed? And he said, yes. You sure you're left-handed? You're sure you're right-handed is what it was. So he would reach with his right. What was it? He would reach with his left hand for the photos, but everything else he was doing with his right hand, adjusting the mic or fidgeting or whatever. So she was like, are you sure that you are whatever handed was? And he's like, yes, it was. Okay, so you're telling me that you're right-handed. Yes, I'm right-handed. Am I saying this right? He claimed he was right-handed, but everything he did, he was doing with his left.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he still was claiming that he was right-handed. So he's like, okay. So she's like, okay, so when you go to strike someone, what arm do you strike with? And he rose his left hand. And in that moment, he like shit himself. Because he realized like where he just fucked up. And she's like, when you go to strike someone, when you go to stab someone, what hand are you striking with?
Left.
And he had to answer. In that moment, his entire demeanor changed. His energy changed. Police officers were putting themselves between him and the lawyers because... And if you see the video footage and, like, the photos, it's evident. Like, the violence and anger and just disgustingness just came to the surface. And then he refused to answer anything. And then the last day of the trial, head down, eyes down, they were asking him, did you kill this one? Did you kill this one? Did you kill this one? And he was just like, yes, 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 yes.
Oh, yes, my God. Yes.
And just went off. It was insane. So
see,
like,
what happens when you're smart people.
So... It was just, it was weird to me because, like, there wasn't any, like, wow factor in here, but I do love the way that she caught him.
Mm.
That she got him to confess how much he fucking hated that yep. shit. And then while in jail, in prison, he had the fucking balls to write a letter to Helene's mom. And basically being like, you know, I don't mean to be so comfortable and talk to you like a friend or whatever. I remember them saying that when he was confessing, one of the moms actually thanked him for confessing to the murder of her daughter. I think it was because Helene's mom didn't attend the trial. And I think once they found him guilty, I think she wrote him a letter.
Mm.
And she was basically giving him her peace of mind or like the peace of her mind or whatever. And then he responded in such a friendly, fucking weird manner.
Yeah.
But she handed it off to like the police department for them to like mindhunter it.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it wasn't like. I don't know.
It was just interesting on a psychological
like,
level.
I honestly think this was just a thing to like. Commemorate these girls and what they went through or whatever, but also kudos to the fucking lawyer that I'll show you the scene afterwards, but it was just like yo, it pays to be observant.
Yes, it does.
Pay attention to your surroundings. I know. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that any that was all over the place. I know it was really badly told, but like I took too many
notes.
That
sounds like a good story.
I took too many fucking notes, and
I was gonna say that's a lot that you took.
I know, because I was trying to like hone in on like the important shit, but it was just like I'm literally jumping around from stuff to stuff. There's obviously a lot more. They obviously did a better job at telling the story. It was all in French.
Well, yeah.
But,
cool.
I just can't believe, I think the most shocking part of this is that he got arrested in 98 and it wasn't until 2001 that this fucking case went to trial.
France seemed kind of slow back then, if they didn't even have a fucking database till 98.
Not only that, but they wouldn't even acknowledge a serial killer. That's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Have you never heard of Jack the Ripper, bitch?
Apparently not.
Interesting. I like
this
it, though.
This is not America. Okay.
Okay, well.
Sucks to be you, because apparently it is.
Yeah, congratulations.
All right, guys. That's it. That's all I got.
That's all I got, too. All
right. Fucking tattoo expo tomorrow. I will not be talking about it next week, because next week is we're recording right now again for next episode. So maybe in two episodes, I'll let you know all about it, and I'll post some pictures.
Hell yeah.
Yes, for sure. Goodbye.
Bye.